The story that I'm about to tell you about a forgotten Catholic priest from the pioneer days is one that has nothing to do with finance or investing. Most of the events take place about 270 miles north of Kansas City. So some of you might want to skip this episode and get back to the regular content that I'll be releasing again starting next week. But others that have an interest in being inspired or want to learn something new, you should stick around. You might find this story kind of interesting.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Inc., a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, investment advisor representative. Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Reformed Financial Advisor, a Kansas City podcast. My name is Andy Flattery. I'm a certified financial planner. And today we are leaving the big city and doing a little passion project. We're going to be talking about events that took place in my hometown of Fort Dodge, Iowa. I'll tell you the story. So last summer I was sitting on a beach in North Carolina and I was reading a obscure self-published book from the 1930s. It was produced by my family's Catholic church in Fort Dodge, Iowa. My mom had gone in and borrowed it for me. I mean, it's just the type of thing you'd want to be doing on vacation, right? That's what I think. You see, the church that's been there for over 160 years will be closed, presumably, later this year. So I was reading the old book and I kind of felt like Nicolas Cage from National Treasure, because when I read the story of the pioneer priest, a man named Father John Marsh, I knew that I had found the Declaration. His story really grabbed me. I had never heard it before. It had happened in the very place that I was given the sacraments and had a ton of my ancestors do the same for well over a century. So I knew that I had to find a way to pass on the story of this man, this pious, multi-talented pioneer priest who was the pastor of all the Catholics in Northwest Iowa and ultimately gave everything he had to these people. In 1859, a man shows up to a town of less than 1,000 people in Northwest Iowa called Fort Dodge. And this was 13 years after the first white settlers would have arrived in the area, and about 9 years after the government would have established a military base that would then be abandoned and turned into a city that at the time would have been considered to have been at the very edge of the Western frontier. The man's name was Father John Marsh.
He was the first pastor of Corpus Christi, or one of their earliest real pastors.
He was the third pastor, to be exact, but he was the first that would stick around for more than a couple of years. And the church was called Corpus Christi Church. It was the very first church established for the Catholic settlers in the area. The voice you just heard was Monsignor Thomas Donahoe, a 94-year-old priest that lives in Fort Dodge, is originally from Fort Dodge, and was the oldest expert I could find on the matter. But the first thing that you have to know about Fort Dodge of the 1850s is that this truly was the frontier of the West.
Nobody would have had any idea where Iowa was or what it was when he was assigned there, including himself. This was basically an area that was chartered, but nobody knew anything about it. And people that were sent out here, like Father Marsh to Fort Dodge, in a way was its own quarantine. you know, you were sent so far away from the people that you knew and loved, in a lot of cases your family, especially with the priests, leaving the place where they learned the priesthood, the seminaries, the teachers, civilization as they knew it, to go out to these little tiny towns and cities where there would be a huge mix of nationalities, of languages, little to no access to the medical field, to professionals that did the same thing. You know, going to a place where you'd have to find a hotel to live in until you could get your own place built.
That was Deacon Rick Roeder, who is an expert on the history of the Catholic Church in Northwest Iowa. He wrote the book Frontiers of Faith, A History of the Diocese of Sioux City. And what we need to understand that in particular, the church would have had a unique mission, and they would have considered it a mission, in going out and administering to the Catholic settlers of Northwest Iowa.
Because there was no church from the Mississippi River west. You had to go from Dubuque to St. Louis to have anything resembling a sanctuary or a steeple like Corpus Christi had.
Okay, so Bishop Loris was bishop of every inch of ground west of him that was not officially assigned to another bishop. So Bishop Loris was responsible for territory basically out to Montana. And when he would send a priest like Father Marsh to Fort Dodge, that meant that Father Marsh was pastor to anybody outward from where he was living to wherever there was another pastor. And I may be wrong, but I believe the closest pastor to him would have been at one of the Indian reservations in probably northeast Kansas or the Minneapolis area. So anywhere that Father Marsh would have heard that there was a settlement that possibly would have Catholics in it, he was duty-bound as a pastor to reach out to them.
Deacon Roeder is referring to Servant of God Bishop Matthias Loris, who was the bishop of the Diocese of Dubuque from 1837 to 1858. But who was Father John Marsh? Well, Father Marsh was an Englishman. He was born in 1818, raised in England, and had an interesting path to the priesthood because he was a married man. Him and his wife had a child. They ended up in the Davenport, Iowa area. And then tragically, his wife and child died, which was the impetus for Father Marsh then entering the seminary in Dubuque, Iowa, becoming a priest, and being the pastor of Corpus Christi Church in Fort Dodge, Iowa, was the only assignment that he would ever have. So this is one of the parts of the story that, of course, I wish we just had more information to understand more about what this was like for him. The one thing we do know is that Father Marsh was an incredibly talented man.
He was a man, a jack of all trades, and pretty much had to be. He was into medicine. He was into agriculture. He was into art. He was into music. He helped build his own first house. He helped build the rectory. He helped build the school. He provided music. He wrote poetry. You know, you had to be very versatile to be a thriving person on the plane.
Yeah, his versatility would put us all to shame. He was a musician. He played the organ beautifully. He was a painter. He painted the altar of the old church at Corpus Christi. He had architectural talent, so he planned the first school and helped to build it. This was also during the time of the Civil War, where there were very few people in the community that had any sort of medical knowledge, and there was no kind of regular medical service in the area. So he was looked to as someone that at least knew a little bit about medicine. He was an expert in gardening, so the farmers would come and ask him about advice on various crop problems that they'd been having.
If you had a little bit of education in those times beyond 6th, 7th, 8th grade, you were a really rare exception. Now, the priests, without exception, had excellent educations. And the sisters too, when they brought the sisters out to a Prairie City, and even after things were more developed, these were people with advanced degrees from college, and nobody had that. So based on whatever talents they had, and obviously Father Marsh was a widely talented man, beyond the talents that they had and the ways that God maybe called them into, you know, certain areas of expertise, beyond that, they had the experience of being in, you know, when you're in a seminary, you're surrounded by people, you know, your roommate might be a guy that's an expert at agriculture. Your other roommate might be a guy who's an expert in music. And, you know, you learn little bits and pieces just being in that environment. So when a guy like Father Marsh left the seminary, went out to Fort Dodge, he was probably dealing with people, immigrants, in a lot of cases, who could not even read and write.
So one of Father Marsh's journals, for example, would have a sketch of a landscape that he had planned out where he shows the diagrams of the various trees and bushes that he had planned for the rectory. One notation was 10 trees, $2.50. And in case you're interested, $2.50 is about $78 in 2020. It shows you how much 10 trees cost back then. Another page had a formula for a hog cholera remedy, which I'm sure he had passed on to the farmers. There was a prescription for an eyewash, some mathematical formulas, some estimates on building costs, names of the various congregation members and the contributions that they had made. So these are all the things that he's kind of writing down in these journals. As an Englishman, he was also really into sports. So in particular, hunting was a big deal, especially in the Iowa of the 1850s and the 1860s. There was a quote from a Miss Anna Ryan who lived near Father Marsh that would say, "The section abounded in ducks, prairie chickens, and wild game of that sort. Prairie chickens were so numerous around our home that I can well remember one time Father Marsh sitting on the porch of our home and shooting a number of them." So imagine a Catholic priest hunting from someone's porch in about 1860. That's a pretty amazing thought. A lot of these Catholic settlers were Irish immigrants. A lot of them arrived in the 1850s. I'm pretty sure my ancestors arrived in the 1870s. So, of course, they would have heard stories about Father Marsh.
You know, a lot of these people came from poor families in Europe, large families in Europe, where their parents could do not a whole lot to provide for them other than saying, if you went to the United States of America, you'd be able to get 80 acres of ground and build yourself a life and a family. And off they went to Antwerp or where, you know, whatever border city they could hop on a ocean liner and head to America and get here. And so you can understand if they ran in, you know, ended up in Fort Dodge by the rail, got there and knew so very little other than maybe some farming knowledge. You could see where that person would rely heavily on Father Marsh for all the advice that they could muster from him.
In addition to being the jack of all trades, and more importantly, was of course his primary job, which was being a priest.
And so he would have been responsible for going to find them and to provide baptisms for their children and blessing marriages, getting to the dying if he could, or blessing graves of people that he couldn't get there in time for. So, you know, when we think of a pioneer pastor, we think that, well, Father Marsh went into Fort Dodge and he secured the sisters and he started the building of the school and he built up the parish there in Fort Dodge. But that's forgetting the fact of the time that he would have had to spend on a horse or in a buggy or even walking, trying to find all the Catholic families that were settling within whatever distance he was able to get to.
So I think the motivations of the settlers is easy enough for us to understand. I think we all understand this kind of American dream of setting out and with nothing, getting a piece of land and establishing a new life in a place like the Iowa of the 1860s. We all have that in our history. But why were these priests doing this? What was the motivation of Father Marsh? I think the answer is they actually believed it. And they were actually motivated to bring the sacraments to these people.
and that was what motivated them to get to every Catholic they could, because they knew that these Catholics were going without Mass until they could get there. And the people and the priest were never left wanting for understanding the importance of the Eucharist. So that was really their motivation. You know, they dealt with everything else with helping more people to get out to these settlements and to select these areas to be their place that they wanted to live and farm and work. But really, to get them the sacraments was the huge part. So they would go with the idea of providing the Mass, but then, of course, they would also let it be known that they were coming as best they could, so anybody within range could bring any children who needed to be baptized, to bless any marriages that, you know, a lot of times couples had to say their vows on their own, which, you know, they are the ministers of the sacrament. The sacrament requires the witness of the church, which is what a priest and a deacon does. So a lot of times people would have to get married and then wait until the priest could come to witness their vows and bless their marriage. So providing the sacraments was pretty sporadic, but they would do what they could to provide the sacraments to the people that they could find. We've run into some pretty cool historical artifacts, one of which was we were working on this particular church, and one of the guys walked in with what looked to be like a maybe 7-inch square piece of granite.
So they bring this find to a historical expert who inspects it.
And we walked up to him and showed it to him, and he gasped. He couldn't believe it. And we're like, what? What is it? And he said, this is a Mass stone for a itinerant pastor. In other words, it was Mass had to be carried out by these pastors that went out to all these people, had to be carried out on something that was as permanent as possible, that could replicate an altar. So he would set his chalice and paten with the body and blood of Christ on this small stone. And the small stone was to signify the permanence of an altar, even though that's the best that he could do. So he would take this small stone and he'd have a pocket for it on his saddle. And that's what he would say Mass on.
Another thing that I like about Father Marsh's priesthood is that he wrote all of the church records himself in Latin, which kind of gives this whole story another kind of otherworldliness quality, and is also just another testament to his immense intellect and education. Hey guys, Andy Flattery here to tell you about a new monthly email newsletter I'm going to be starting for the Reformed Financial Advisor podcast. Here's what it's going to include: my best financial planning tips sent directly to your inbox, as well as insights on how to invest in a world after coronavirus. Of course, I'm also going to have to include some Kansas City history tidbits. And then lastly, you'll get all of the updates on the progress of this podcast, The Reformed Financial Advisor. So get on the email list at reformedfinancialadvisor.com and you'll get the monthly newsletter. That's reformedfinancialadvisor.com. Now it's time to tell you about the absolute best part of the Father Marsh story. This was a man who absolutely gave everything he had for the cause. This man in his 40s who was a widower, who had become a Catholic priest, been sent out on horseback to the Western frontier, gave everything he had in a very literal way. In one sense, this is a man who had a little bit of money and eventually gave it all away to the church. We know for sure that at one point when the school had burned down, he donated $1,100 of his own money to rebuild the school. That's about $34,000 in 2020 terms. And by the end of his life, he only had $10 left amongst his belongings. So he had given all of his money away, for one thing. Now, on the property right next to Corpus Christi Church was the home of John Hare. And this was the place where Father Marsh would go and take his meals. So he became a good, close family friend of the Hares. And I actually had a chance to speak to the ancestor of John Hare, whose name is also, wait for it, John Hare. John Hare today is still a man who farms in the Webster County area and still remembers the stories that his family had passed down to him about Father Marsh over the years. So the original John Hare, who Father Marsh had taken his meals from, had a daughter named Anna who said this, quote, "I think Father Marsh seldom had more than one suit of clothes, always well-patched. I believe he had a little money when he came to Fort Dodge, but he would spend practically nothing on himself. What little he had went to help the church," end quote. In addition, Father Marsh gave everything that he had physically. So recall, this was a time and a place where a lot of men that were building things like a church or a schoolhouse, they would just band together and do it. They were capable of doing it. And I have to imagine in the Fort Dodge of the 1860s, there were not a lot of big general contractors back in the day. So this Catholic priest would stand with these men and he would build these buildings with them. I have to imagine that would have been a pretty amazing sight, especially if he was wearing the cassock. I read one quote from a Mrs. Nicholson that said, quote, "I remember one holiday when everyone was making merry. Father Marsh spent the day working on the roof of the school. I saw him that evening sitting in front of the Hare store." By the way, she's again referring to the Hare family, which is spelled H-A-I-R-E. "And he looked so tired, but he would never spare himself." There's another quote again from Anna Hare, who described a similar experience, quote, "Father Marsh would get slivers in his hands from his carpentry work. And I can remember my mother in the evening trying to get these slivers out," end quote. The travel was backbreaking. So Father Marsh, of course, would travel to the various small communities that were popping up in Northwest Iowa. And he would also travel back and forth to and from Dubuque, Iowa, to bring the Sisters of Charity to Fort Dodge. He brought the sisters to this frontier town. He built them a log cabin to live in and set up the very first Catholic school in Fort Dodge, which makes him the father of Catholic education in Northwest Iowa. This had a lasting legacy. These nuns were in Fort Dodge off and on for over a century. My mom had a chance to be educated by them in the 60s and the 70s. I was able to be educated by one of the last nuns in Fort Dodge, Sister Dominic, who taught me calculus. And let me tell you, man, she was tough.
Where the school was, that's where the church belonged. That's the tradition of Fort Dodge.
And that was the tradition that Father Marsh started in Fort Dodge.
You know, I think he died when he was 47 or 48. You know, and life expectancy was a lot lower at the time. But you think about the pressure and the immensity of the labor that was required to reach out to everyone that you could find. And, you know, part of that was getting out to the outlying settlements to find out, okay, what have you heard beyond where you live? You know, are there people settling in the area of, you know, 60 miles north of here, 60 miles south of here? The man's labor, his labors were immense. And sometimes I think we forget that.
Father Marsh died at age 47, having been a priest at Corpus Christi Church in Fort Dodge for less than 6 years. And he died the way that he had lived. That afternoon, he had conducted a rehearsal with the students of the school, teaching them hymns, but he didn't show up for supper at the Hare House that night. Thinking that he might have been sick, several people went over to check on him, and Father Marsh responded by entertaining them for the rest of the night by playing the organ. Quote, "Looking back, my mother thought he was preoccupied. He played the little organ in his home almost continuously while they were there, and they sat and listened. About 11 o'clock, his arms dropped as though from sheer exhaustion. They got up and left. That was the last seen of him alive," end quote. The next morning, Father Marsh was found dead in his bed, lying, resting peacefully with his hands folded. Later on, it would be revealed that he had some sort of heart trouble for quite a while and had worked his body, obviously, to the absolute limit. And the loss of Father Marsh was sudden, it was surprising, and it was absolutely devastating for the town. The date was February 22nd, 1865, so Washington's birthday, and quote, "The whole community was suddenly in mourning for him," says Mrs. Kelly. "The many festivities planned for Washington's birthday, as were customary in early times, were immediately postponed. All wished to do honor to the pioneer priest, as he was loved by Catholic and Protestant," end quote. The following year, a local parishioner who had been writing to his son who was wounded in the Civil War wrote, quote, "I think I mentioned the good priest we had here, the Reverend Father Marsh. I cannot speak too often of his virtues. He was the best man I ever knew, no exceptions. I think his superior was not on this earth. They had a flourishing school when the good priest died. Then the school was given up and the sisters went home. We have two good priests here now, but they are not like Father Marsh. And that is no disparagement to them, as the likes of him will not be found. Father Marsh was buried beneath the altar of the church, which is usually something reserved for great saints. Famously, St. Peter's Basilica has got great saints that are buried everywhere throughout the building, most famously St. Peter. And it's hard to know exactly what these local settlers were thinking at the time when they buried him, but it's very clear that they thought of him as their own local saint. He would stay buried there for another 16 years until they would build the new church, the building that still stands there today.
Recall that that was done in the 1880s, and that arrangement was made in the 1870s. They did their quarry work. They began the quarry work, I began to think, in 1879. And it took them about 2 years to get the stone, to complete the quarry work, and then they began constructing the church. During which time, the architect was drawing up plans.
And when the impressive building that we know in 2020 as Corpus Christi Church was completed, and that was in 1881, the church was commemorated in part with a huge ceremony conducted for Father Marsh. The Fort Dodge Messenger, the local newspaper, writes, quote, "The ceremonies attending the removal of the remains held at Corpus Christi Church Thursday were of a very impressive character. Precisely at the hours appointed, the beautiful temple was comfortably filled with devout and sympathetic worshipers of every denomination," end quote. The community had banded together to come up with another suitable tomb for Father Marsh. The Messenger again writes, quote, "Nearly all the old settlers of the city and surrounding country generously responded to the call of assisting in the charitable enterprise. The vault is a beautiful specimen of monumental architecture and cost about $1,000, end quote. Now, my brother Neil went out to find this vault, and he could not find it. So I'll put a picture in the show notes of what it used to look like. But if anyone knows what happened to this vault, please let me know. But in any case, Father Marsh is still buried in Corpus Christi Cemetery in a much simpler gravesite, and you can visit him today. It's in Fort Dodge, Iowa. You can still go to pay your respects to Father Marsh, the great pioneer priest of Fort Dodge, Iowa. You know, it's kind of fitting that he is in a humble gravesite now. It's a gravesite that maybe fits the way that he lived. And the fact that Father Marsh is forgotten is also kind of appropriate. He's not on the internet in any way, shape, or form. It's not like his story has been written about or movies have been made, even though maybe it should. And his story is not necessarily completely rare. There were many pioneer priests that gave up similar things and had similar sacrifices. And so I think maybe it's fitting that he is seen as just another pioneer priest during that era.
It was just a really difficult situation to go into. It took a lot of bravery, took a lot of foresight to know that these territories would eventually be populated with not only Catholics, but all faiths and that came here. And I just have a tremendous respect and love for those pioneers. They were special people. They need to be remembered and honored, and Father March is a really good example of that.
So what about the aforementioned Corpus Christi church that will be closing later this year, of which Father March built one of the earlier iterations of the building? Well, the current Corpus Christi church that was built in 1881 and was commemorated with the large ceremony where they removed the tomb of Father March. Well, the building has got some structural difficulties. It was built in kind of an odd location. As Monsignor Donahoe puts it,
it was built in not a very choice place at all. They say going from 8th Street down to 7th Street downhill, in my wagon, I had enough speed that I cut my head open severely, and I got scars to show it to this day. I think if I would look and I could find them. So that's what I'm trying to tell you, that it is not an ideal place for a church, especially one that was to become as prestigious as Corpus Christi.
By the way, Monsignor was recalling events that happened to him 80 to 90 years ago when he went down the hill in his wagon and fell out. And he was very apologetic to me because he was not able to remember everything that he wanted to relate to me about Corpus Christi history. But I didn't see it all. The amount of things that the 94-year-old man was able to recall just about the people that lived on his block in Fort Dodge, Iowa as a young kid was pretty amazing.
Charlie O'Connor lived on 8th Street, and I lived on 4th Avenue in the north between 8th and 9th Street. And there were a couple of us, and Don Parks, his dad was the fire chief. And they lived at the corner of 7th Street and 4th Avenue North. Across the other corner was Al Downing, and he had Angela, who married the Krause, the Storrs, all over the place. You know what I'm talking about?
He was talking about the come-and-go gas stations, which are all over the place, by the way, and I did not know what he was talking about. But the point is that the building was built in a tough spot. The structure would cost millions and millions to redeem. And as Monsignor Donahoe puts it, Father March helps to start a tradition where the school is intimately tied in with the church, because Holy Trinity Church is being built right now next to St. Edmund Catholic Schools, which is where I went to high school, and we never had an actual church in the school. We went to Mass in the auditorium, which was not ideal. So this will be a really good thing for the school. But I have to admit, I was a little skeptical about this. I wanted them to maintain the history of Corpus Christi and help to preserve this building. But Monsignor Donahoe helped me understand something that I'll let him describe.
The fact that Holy Trinity Parish constructed its new church where the school is has tradition. That's the history of Fort Dodge right there. The church goes where the school is. and so there's all kinds of justification for it. And I thought that was significant and important.
So maybe it should have been the other way around and the school should have gone where the church is. But I like the way Monsignor is thinking about this in the tradition of Fort Dodge. And I like that Father March is tied in to this as well.
But that's part of the beauty of knowing our history, is knowing people like that. In our creed, we mention the communion of saints. These are our ancestors in our faith, our ancestors for heaven. And we need to rely on them and trust them that they're there and that they're praying for us. So,
well, folks, I think that will just about do it. Thank you for sticking with this and for letting me try something a little bit different on this podcast. We'll be back to the regular fare next week. But special thanks to Deacon Rick Roeder and Monsignor Donahoe, both of whom have a love for the church and a love for history.
To be a devout Catholic, you have to have some historian in you. You know, obviously, Jesus Christ was God became flesh and moved into history. And he was born into a family. He was born into a religion. He was born into a town. He was born into a country. In our creed, we speak of Pontius Pilate, which helps us to remember that it was a historical thing that happened. So every Catholic has to be some sort of a historian.
For more information on the podcast, for show notes, and to subscribe, make sure to go to reformedfinancialadvisor.com.